Hi and welcome to another podcast from The Human Diver, where we are looking to apply counter-errorism techniques in diving. By that we mean human factors and non-technical skills. Our goal is to give you the knowledge and skills so that your dives are safer and more enjoyable. The podcast consists of audio blogs which have been published on our website. Show notes will be provided so you can dig deeper if you want. Ready to jump in? What does good enough mean? If you think about it, good is a relative term because, by definition, there must be something or many things which aren't good, and you are making a judgment against your perception of good. The term doing it right, or DIR, attracted significant criticism in the 1990s and early 2000s because of a logical fallacy we often use to view the world in binary options. If you aren't doing it right, then you must have been doing it wrong. However, once we grow up from such a childish view, we realize the world is far more complex than that, and such binary attributions are not valid, nor are they helpful when it comes to learning or improving relationships. There is always a compromise, but as long as the compromise is informed and the trade-offs understood, then why not use it? Unfortunately, the same binary attributions are often used for safe in diving. Think about what you consider to be safe. Is an 18-meter open water dive safe compared to a 5-hour cave dive thousands of feet back, or the exploration of a wreck at 60 meters? Again, there is often a belief that there is a binary view of the world. If you aren't safe, you must be unsafe. This is obviously false because safety involves avoiding harm and accepting a level of risk. However, the risk is dynamic and the perception and acceptance of that risk is driven by context, experience, and the ever-moving goals which are being faced. No one can tell me a quantitative level of acceptable risk or uncertainty in diving other than zero deaths, but the only way to achieve that is to not go diving. For example, having a free-flowing regulator on a single tank for a new diver could be considered unsafe by them. But for an experienced diver who has undertaken many dives where training to deal with emergency situations is commonplace, then such an event is just a normal activity and wouldn't be considered unsafe. So we can see that safe and risky are relative terms, often defined or bounded by an outcome rather than the entering behaviours or the situation. This can pose a problem for those who want to improve, because society often expects absolutes when it comes to performance, such as what certification do you hold or what are you qualified to do. However, what has been recognized in high-risk domains is that as soon as you put a defined metric of minimum performance, it then becomes the norm. This happens for a variety of reasons, not least that humans are simple creatures, and we like to expend as little energy as possible, especially mental energy. Therefore, if someone has defined a minimum standard, it will become the norm across a large proportion of the community. For those in positions of authority or influence in diving, this focus on minimum standards introduces a dilemma when it comes to commercial viability of an activity. Some training agencies use the sell it cheap, sell lots of it to make their money, whereas others work on the quality model, ensuring that both students and instructors focus on high performance and high quality, but at an increased cost. This emphasis on quality has a number of advantages, not least an increased retention in the sport, because a mindset of learning and developing is instilled, and that students or graduates have a want to improve, not a need to gain another certification card. And the learning continues after the classes. Compare good enough for a diver or instructor candidate who has achieved mastery to pass their course, a mastery which is based on the minimum standards, to a diver who recognizes that good enough means the skills, knowledge, and attitude which pertains to a pursuit of excellence. Some of you might think that fast and cheap always means low quality. That isn't the case. Another logical fallacy, but it is certainly more likely. To illustrate the difference between these concepts, think about someone drawing a picture, such as Spider-Man, in 10 minutes, then again in 1 minute, and finally in 10 seconds. Imagine what the difference in quality will be. I have linked to an example video in the show notes. First, consider it with the frame of reference that you need significant time to develop a high fidelity model. It requires an investment in time and effort to create something worthwhile, something which is good enough. In a 1 minute or 10 second drawing, the image might be good enough if you know the context and what the image is supposed to be. A simplified model of reality, but one which requires a little effort to understand. It isn't obvious. Secondly, consider it with the frame that there is only a finite resource of time to create an image, and that if given a shorter period of time, then the quality of the image will reduce. This is an externally driven constraint. The operating environment is such that time is a commodity, which means a higher level of quality cannot be delivered. In diving, as long as everything goes to the safe plan which was developed, then good enough is indeed good enough. This is the same as the 1 minute Spider-Man drawing, or the 10 second one, an image which can be interpreted as Spider-Man as long as it is something we are expecting. However, in real life, things rarely go to plan because we do not have a crystal ball to plan with 100% certainty. Now consider that Spider-Man is a set of skills or a mental model which helps you solve a problem you encounter when you are diving. Thinking of the previous example, the two frames of reference concern time, 10 minutes versus 1 minute versus 10 seconds, and quality, does it look like Spider-Man? In terms of how good those skills are, it could be argued that time is closely linked with money, both from a delivery perspective, how quickly and cheaply can the course be delivered to a student, and also the time taken to develop the instructor in their training and certification, and the associated costs which need to be recovered somehow. A highly skilled instructor will have invested more time and money than a zero to hero program, which meets the minimum standards required of the instructor candidate. The instructor can only pass on the skills and knowledge they have attained to their students, and so the failure is twofold. The instructor and student are both good enough, not just the instructor. In fact, the student will be worse off because there is never 100% accuracy when reproducing something. Crucially, if we want to improve the situation, we need to internally generate a better perspective of good enough. This perspective allows us to trade off between efficiency and thoroughness. When certainty is not clear, we should be more thorough, especially when the consequences could be fatal, but this requires us to slow down and be less efficient. We need to understand what good enough is for that diver or group of divers and how they are rationalizing the decisions they are making. This weekend, I spent some time with someone who dives but also works in the oil and gas sector. I mentioned to them during an investigation that there is a need to know what normal work looks like. He responded by saying that the investigations should identify what they should have done, what good looked like. My response was this isn't what investigators and those who want to learn from their own and others' performance should be looking at. Good invariably means going back to the standards or best practice. Documents which often don't take into account the constraints on operations like money, time, and workload. As such, the difference between what is done is sometimes and often very different to normal. The problem is normal is often good enough, and we need to look at what was different because it is the differences in a system that catch people out. Steve Shorrock explains the differences between work as imagined, work as prescribed, and work as done. Just replace work with diving, and you will get a clear view of this conundrum. I have linked to his blog in the show notes. So what does this look like in diving? A number of years ago, I was planning on diving a wreck in approximately 50 meters off the south coast of the UK with a team of other divers. My gear hadn't been used for a bit, and as I assembled it the day before, I remembered that the suit inflate bottle had been leaking a little from the neck O-ring. I changed the O-ring and charged the bottle. The following day, when we loaded the gear on the boat, I made sure that I topped up the suit bottle with a transfer whip. I don't have a gauge on the first stage as I have never needed one, and still don't, and the addition of another component adds more failure points. As I get my gear on, I connect the dry suit feed, pressing the inflate button, and it works. We jump in and start descending down the shot line, and at about 30 meters, the suit inflate stops working, the bottle is empty. We get to 50 meters, and I am somewhat uncomfortable because I am now shrink-wrapped. I don't want to say something to my buddy because we've just spent 90 minutes getting to the wreck site, and I don't want to thumb the dive as we won't get back on the site. Fortunately for me, we hit the seabed and the wreck is nowhere to be seen. We swim around for about 5 minutes trying to find it before deciding that enough is enough and we thumb the dive. As we ascend, the pressure reduces and the discomfort stops. Any person can thumb a dive for any reason. a mantra that is drummed into divers. It should be true. However, it doesn't take into account the social circumstances involved. If you are diving regularly and can afford to throw a dive for money or time purposes, then thumbing a dive for something like this is easy. However, when divers, most divers, are time poor rather than money poor, they will accept something which is good enough in the current situation rather than good enough in the cold light of day. Summary: we are always subject to an efficiency thoroughness trade-off, ETTO. We never have enough money, time, or equipment to do what we'd like to do in the manner which we'd like to. This means we are trading one off against another based on an acceptable level of uncertainty. However, it is not possible to define this level in a quantitative manner, so we use biases, recency bias and recall bias, to help us make those decisions. In many cases, a suboptimal good enough is indeed good enough because the gremlins in the system, the latent pathogens which Professor James Reason describes, haven't merged to create that perfect storm. So the next time you are dealing with some uncertainty and you have a choice about what is good enough, mediocrity or excellence, consider which Spider-Man, mental model or skill set you'd like to be looking at to help you solve the problem you've just encountered. Remember, if your choice is wrong, you will only find out as the event unfolds in front of you, and it might be too late to resolve without serious injury or death. To improve our determination of good enough, we can share context-rich stories of near misses and incidents. These stories should explain the local rationality of why the storyteller thought the situation was good enough and what caused things to tip the balance the wrong way on this particular occasion. The analysis should not be judged based on outcomes, be that a good outcome or a bad outcome, because if the outcome was bad, the tendency to judge more harshly due to outcome bias is normal. In addition, you have more information than the diver in the situation. You know with 100% certainty what will happen. Thanks for listening to this podcast. If you'd like to know more about what was discussed in this episode, head over to the Human Diver website at thehumandiver.com, where you will find details about our education programs, the If Only documentary, the book Under Pressure, and the many, many blogs we have published there. If you think others should listen and learn, consider sharing the link. Thank you.